Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
Photographing seriously in Asia. And I would take 2 rolls of film a day. That's 76 exposures. And when I would tell people that, their jaws would drop to the floor. They found that that was unimaginable. That was insane. And they would say that was insane amount of pictures to take in one day. And the idea that everybody would be taking them really would just, nobody would believe that. They would say, well, why would I take 20 pictures a day? That's how could anybody do that? And that's just to show kind of how we change what we do based on the availability of it. And, you know, we've been talking about AI. It's when AI enables us these new abilities, we right now may have difficulty imagining how we would use them or why we would use them, but we are going to use them because they're available.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Kevin, welcome back to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
It's my pleasure. Always a delight to chat with you, and especially happy to share my thoughts with your fans and audience.
Yeah, well, you have a new book out called Excellent Advice for Living. And I think the thing that struck me most was that it was kind of a departure from some of your previous books that were largely focused around technology and innovation, whereas this one is really life advice that you've compiled over 50, 60 years, it sounds like. But before we get into the book, I want you to start by asking, what did your parents do for work? And how did that end up influencing and shaping what you've ended up doing with your life and career?
That's a great question. My mom was a housewife. She had 5 kids in 5 years. So at one point she had a 1-year-old, 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, and a 5-year-old. I was the oldest of the 5. And that was her full-time job. My dad began as a degree in meteorology in the 40s, and that was one of the first places they ever used computers to try and predict the weather. He got involved then in trying to program computers, but he wasn't really a born programmer. He was much more kind of like interested in that, and so he knew enough programming to consult on it, and he got a job with a consultancy, Pricewaterhouse, helping people computerize their business. And one of their clients was Time Life, the magazine. And so my dad wound up working, leaving Pricewaterhouse and working for Time Life in their, what we would now call their IT department, and it was called at that time Operations Research. And again, they were trying to basically digitize, although they didn't use that term, computerize the company, Time Life. If you could imagine having 1 million subscribers to your magazines without computers, it's like it boggles my mind how they could possibly have kept track of people's subscriptions without a computer, at that scale. So anyway, that was one of the first things they did. And then they went on to try and bring computers into the rest of the company, including doing page layout, which is what my father was involved in. But that was not his true, he was not that technical. And he eventually wound up working in some of Time Life's new acquisitions. One of them was Manhattan Cable TV, which became, over time, HBO. So my dad inadvertently kind of wound up being involved in the new media of cable TV. Even though I grew up without TV, we didn't have it in our house when I was younger. So in a weird way, he was, and I wanted nothing to do with what my dad was interested in. So like I was not interested in computers and I was not interested in, big publishing, but
fate has a sense of humor.
Yes, exactly. I wanted to be a hippie. I was, I was a hippie. I didn't own anything. I had a bicycle and a sleeping bag, and I was spent most of my time in Asia, remote parts of Asia for many years. And I was interested in photography at a time before photography was cool. And when photography was very, very expensive and very difficult to do, originally you had to develop, you had to be a chemist. You had to develop your own pictures and all that. You had, and you know, chemistry and optics. And it was expensive. When I was photographing in Asia, to take a color picture of a scene would be an equivalent of $5 per snapshot, you know, per picture today. Imagine each, you know, if you had to pay $5 every time you snapped a picture on your phone, it's crazy. So that's what my dad did.
So a couple of questions come from that. The first is about growing up in a family of that many kids. I wonder what growing up in such a large family taught you about navigating social dynamics and how that has ended up applying to both your professional life and your business career.
Yeah. Well, I was oldest of five. So we went through everything together. We went through elementary school basically as a group. We went through middle school and high school together. And so, my closest brother, who's only 1 year younger than I am, we shared a room for most of our lives. We've never had an argument in our entire lives, even at this age. So I think I learned it was very tight quarters. We weren't wealthy. We were sharing bedrooms and everything else. So I think I learned to share pretty early. And there really wasn't that much of a difference between us so that we could really feel like we were comrades. I think our family was not very vocal. Even to this day, well, both my parents have passed, but I have no idea what their political, alignment was. I have no idea. I have no idea what who they voted for. I have no idea what they thought. They just never, ever discussed it. So it was sort of old school in that way, where my parents were reserved in that way, maybe even emotionally reserved. So I was comfortable with that because that's how we grew up.
So how in the world do you get from photography to being the founder of Wired to writing all these books? Because I'd imagine, much like everybody else, I don't think your trajectory is very linear. And even hearing you talk about photos, I was thinking about this because, you know, when my sister had her baby, my dad and I were talking about this. He's 70. And I asked him, I was like, how many photos do you have of when you were a kid? He's like two or three. And we said, did you realize this kid, my nephew has had more photos taken of him in 4 months than all of us probably combined have had taken of us in our lifetime.
It's true. Speaking of photography, my family had a Brownie camera and would have there was a roll of film that was 24 exposures in one roll, and they would do one a year. 24 pictures a year. So they'd take some around Christmas, us opening presents. Maybe one on Halloween over the costumes, maybe one at Easter. And I When I was a kid, I built a model railway layout that I did the wiring for. And I was like 10 years old. I'd do all this stuff. Later on, when I was 12, I built a nature museum with exhibits and had kids collecting stuff with, how rocks, ultraviolet, how wings work, all this stuff. And I built a chemistry lab later on when I was older. There's not a single picture of any of that. Right. Not a single one. Never. I mean, it wasn't that I lost them. They was just never taken. No one ever thought to photograph that. So yeah, so we're in a different world where photography is sort of default. And by the way, if you told, well, when I was photographing seriously in Asia, and I would take two rolls of film a day, that's 76 exposures. And when I would tell people that, their jaws would drop to the floor. They found that that was unimaginable. That was an insane. And they would say that was an insane amount of pictures to take in one day. And the idea that everybody would be taking them really would just nobody would believe that. They would say, well, why would I take 20 pictures a day? That's how could anybody do that? And that's just to show kind of how we change what we do based on the availability of it. And, you know, we've been talking about AI. It's when AI enables us these new abilities, we right now may have difficulty imagining how we would use them or why we would use them, but we are going to use them because they're available.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now, with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you go from that to Wired Magazine? Because I remember you telling me some of these things the first time we spoke. And I mean, you were pretty early at the forefront of writing about some of these things, thinking about some of these things, because I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, Wired was founded when I was in college.
Yeah, it was actually founded almost exactly 30 years ago. It was, we wow. launched the first issue, I think it was in February of 2003. And no, I mean, 1993, sorry, 1993. And so, it's a very circuitous journey, full of detours and completely unplanned and unintentional and inadvertent. So I, as I said, I was a kind of a hippie-ish person who dropped out of college, went to Asia with a tiny, tiny amateur camera. And I got on Asia because it became my university. Everything was happening on the street, and everything was open, and everything was different and weird and unbelievable. And it was hugely diverse, you know, between Turkey and Japan and Siberia and Indonesia. I mean, it's this huge diversity, and half the people of the world live there. And so, I just couldn't have enough of, learning from Asia. And, but I wasn't interested in really technology and that kind of stuff. And, came back, started to write about travel because I knew a lot about that. Decided I wanted to go in business, try business. And I decided the best way, I thought about going to business school, but decided the best way was actually to do something, to make a little business. Take $200 and see if I could start a business, and I would learn more that way, which is absolutely true. And so I was trying to do a mail order catalog about travel books that I knew about, that nobody else knew about, that I would import, like this guy named Rick Steves that nobody had heard of. He had some books, and Tony and Maureen Wheeler had books called Lonely Planet. And so I started to make a mail order catalog for these books, and I was working at a science lab in the University of Georgia, and they had a computer, an Apple IIe, to do the number crunching. And I figured out that you could get a modem to transmit the stuff that I would type up to make a catalog to send it to a local printer to print out, to print. And that modem opened up the world to me. When I got the modem onto the little Apple, there were bulletin boards. There was the beginning of the online world. This is in the early 80s, like 81 or 82. And so, that changed my relationship, because for the first time, there was a technology that seemed to me to be closer to human scale. It seemed more organic. It seemed almost like Amish in a certain weird way of being able to communicate with others who are like-minded, you know, wherever they were. And there was something about that. And so I became interested in online. I was starting to report on the online world as if it was another continent. It was like another Asia, another country. And then I got myself invited on to some of these experimental ones. And one of them, the experimental places, was where the Whole Earth Catalog was writing, was doing computer reviews, software reviews, tool reviews. And then I got hired at the catalog, and we started to do other things online, including making the first public access to the internet, which was called The Well in 1984. And so that was the route. It was coming through the online world, living online, learning to write online, learning to type. And that world of seeing people blossom and collaborate online was how I became interested in technology. And it forced me to relook at all technologies and to see it in a different light, because I saw a more organic view of it through the online communities and the online world.
Well, I want to bring back a clip from our last conversation, which I think will make a perfect segue into what's going on in the world today, as well as your new book. Take a listen.
I truly do believe that this is both the very best time in the history of the universe, as far as we can tell, at least the history of this world, to make something, because the tools for creation have never been more easily gotten. They've been never been cheaper. They've never been better. They've never been as diverse. And they truly are make things more accessible. So if you want to make something that has been made already, like in terms of like a book, a movie, a song, some of the tools to do that are just about free, and which means almost anybody in the world can get their hands on it. And many of these things in previous generations were prohibitively expensive and really relegated to the elites. But now you can make a book that looks as good as a book that hottest bestseller author can make, and you can distribute it. It costs very little to do.
So, you know, I thought that would be an interesting jump off point from our previous conversation, because of the fact that I feel like what you said there, which I think it was probably 5 years ago, is 100 times more true today than it was then. And, I remember, you know, as I was saying before we hit record, I'd read your article, that you called Picture Limitless Creativity at Your Fingertips. And I think the couple of things that struck me most were a couple of lines. You said that generative AI will alter how we design just about everything. Oh, and not a single human artist will lose their job because of this new technology. So talk to me about that idea in the connection with what you said to me in that clip.
That no one's going to lose their job, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
In addition to being the best time to make things.
Well, yeah. So it is still the best time to make things. It's even better than 5 years ago. Just parenthetically, one of the advances on these generative AIs, which can produce unlimited and kind of ceaseless creativity in a picture, a two-dimensional, like a photograph or a painting, is that that's not really the real superpower. The real superpower is going to be used in making video and games and 3D worlds, because those are things right now that are still not as easy to do yourself. I mean, it takes team and money still, even today with the current tools. If you want to make a movie, a long feature length movie, it still requires an incredible team and a budget of some sort. But with future AI tools alike, the image generators, you'll be able to do that from your bedroom. And that will be a huge thing, because right now the moving image is the center of our culture. It's not books. It's not, you know, it's not opera. It's not text. It's not blogs. It's not even TikTok or social media. It's the moving image is the gravity, the pivot of our culture. And so being able to produce those in full dimensions and fully rendered scenes that are inhabited and populated by characters who are consistent over time, that's a huge step in this kind of making everything available. So we have not yet got there, but we're on our way. And that's why these generative tools are so exciting, because they're pointing us in that direction. So I think that's still true. The question about employment is, I think, a little bit of a distraction. I've been trying to find an actual case of somebody who lost their job due to AI in any capacity, whether it's a radiologist, a lawyer, an artist, or something. I haven't found anybody with a real name who says, I lost my job because of AI. I think I might be able to find somebody in whose business it was transcribing text or audio into text. There were people who do that, and I can't imagine anybody still doing that by human, because this AI is so much better. Yeah. But I haven't yet actually gotten their name to see whether they actually did lose their job or whether they've just worked for someone else, you know, whatever. So I don't know. So the reason is that I think our tasks will change. You'll still have the job doing whatever it is. Designers, they, you know, these things right now are primarily partners. They're the universal intern. They are partners at the best. As long as the audience for the kind of finished product is a human, humans are going to be involved because we have a very good sense of what other humans like. And AIs, as well trained as they are, they don't have a clue. And so, we're going to primarily, the relationship we'll have is of interns, assistants, partners, guides, you know, things on the side, the kind of what I call the centaur stance of a hybrid of a team. And, that's, you know, there will be certain amount of stuff that's completely generated by AI that doesn't have any human involved, but that's mostly going to be used for where there is no, where it's blank right now. It's sort of like, we'll have pictures where there are no pictures at all, or sound and music where there is no sound. So like right now, this conversation right now has no scoring, no soundtrack, but it could have a soundtrack in the back that's being generated with AI to match whatever it is that we're saying. So That's the kind of thing where we have this kind of completely automated, auto-generated creativity is not to replace what we're currently have with creative work, but in places where there isn't. So it's the places where there are no illustrations. That's where we're going to be using completely generated AI stuff. Or places where we don't have a video, that's where we're going to use completely generated stuff. The things where we pay a lot of attention to, that stance, those people, I think, are not going to lose their jobs. Their jobs are just going to be transformed where we reward AI whisperers, people who are really good at working with AI. They will have an advantage in producing things, just like if you can use Photoshop or Adobe Premiere. And you're making mm-hmm. things, those are the tools that you want to get good at. And so I think it goes beyond just the generative stuff to, you know, other ways that these AIs will facilitate what it is that we do. Yes, it will replace some jobs, but in almost every case where it replaces is, it's either something we aren't doing and wouldn't do or something that we hate doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, yeah, you should be picking lettuce. It should be, mopping floors. That'd be good.
Life is full of awesome what ifs and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now, with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned too that I'd been working on this book, The Artificially Intelligent Creative, and sort of a conclusion that I came to was if you can combine human creativity with artificial intelligence, what you get are creative superpowers. You know, to your point, like the minute you said that about this podcast, my thought was, well, if I wanted to, I could go into, say, a ChatGPT tool and say, take my conversation with Kevin and reorganize it in an NPR narrative style podcast. Yes. And I could. Yep. I could totally do that. And then I would have to do the work. And so what I realized was that, you know, your imagination matters so much more. Like I remember very distinctly, I had a mentor who would go around the country and he would ask people, this was in, you know, 2013, 2011 or so, right after the Great Recession. And he would ask them, do you know how to use the internet? And of course, they'd look at him dumbfounded. And then he would say, great, show me something that you've made using the internet. And that always stayed with me. And so my default question always became, when I saw a new piece of technology, what can I make with this that I couldn't before? And I realized that technical competence would actually start to decline in importance, and the ability to imagine what was possible with a tool would be the thing that mattered most. And that's what I'm finding every day as I'm going through these various experiments with AI.
I might disagree a little bit on your technical competence. I just think it shifts.
Yeah.
It shifts from, I don't have to know Photoshop, but I have to learn how to talk to the AI. I have to be really good about describing. So there's a different technical skill. In that case, we may think that it's going to be verbal, but in fact, I think a lot of the this visual stuff we've done visually, meaning that, you know, like instead of I'll sketch something to the AI as a first sketch and say, okay, here's, it's like you're talking to an actual other assistant. I'll sketch it out and they'll take the sketch and work it, and I'll use a little arrow. I'll say, no, like right here, I want it darker, and I'll scribble there and stuff. And so, that skill. It's the skill of like directing. It's the skill of like conducting. It's the skill of producing, which are all arts themselves. And, I think that technical stuff heads in that direction. But it's still something, it's still a skill that some people will be better at than others because of the amount of time and the way that they've deliberately increased their powers, but it's still a skill that can be learned and has to be learned. And I don't think the skillness goes away at all. I think it just shifts.
Well, it's funny you say that because, you know, I shared with you my little Fresh Prince of Bel Air parody, and in an attempt to animate it and do all this stuff, I finally got to my point of frustration. And I realized, wait a minute, I need to be self-directed enough to learn how to use this Adobe Character Animator tool. So I literally was like, great, then I can ask this to be my teacher and say, create a curriculum for me, which was mind-boggling to me that it could do that and give me a relatively decent curriculum to, you know, take on these various self-directed learning projects, which I realized, to your point, I included a section titled How to Talk to AI because I was watching a friend struggle with the note-taking app that I use. And he was like, I don't get it. Why is it not doing these things? So I literally gave him a tutorial. And of course, after that, his eyes kind of got wide open. He was, like, holy shit, this is insane. I'm like, yep, it is. Well, let's get into the book. I think that, as I mentioned, this book was really kind of a departure from a lot of your previous books. And I got the sense that this was basically a book of all the things you'd ever wanted to tell your children.
Yes. Well, it became that, but actually it started off as a book that I kind of wrote for myself in a certain way. These little bits of advice, which I tried to take an entire book of wisdom, an entire lifetime experience, and try to reduce it down to a single sentence. That was my little challenge, was take all these complicated things I might know about, say, investment, and then reduce it to one or two sentences. And those sentences are a reminder to me. I like to make them into kind of a way that I can kind of repeat them to myself. So like an example of kind of this wisdom that I repeat to myself would be, when I can't find something in my house, and I know I have one, and I'm going around looking for it, and I finally find it, I tell myself, when I replace it, don't put it back where I found it. Put it back where I first looked for it. And that has made a huge difference. So every time I do that, I remind myself, okay, I'm putting this back. Don't put it back where I found it. Put it back where I first looked for it. And so, these ideas, these little wisdoms and proverbs and maxims are for me to kind of put them in a form that are very easily for me to remember, and I remember them by doing them. So like another piece of advice is, whenever there's a contentious issue with two sides, try to find the third side. The third side will kind of break it apart. The third side will be the release from that two-sided controversy. And it's a way of kind of, what's the word, triangulating out that kind of insolvable, dilemma. And so, so I repeat to myself, okay, well, I see two sides, people arguing back and forth. What's the third side? Let me see if I can find the third side. So these things are for me to repeat. And I thought, and I'd wish some of them that I had known long ago. I wish that it didn't take me 70 years to kind of get that. And so I decided to write them down for my kids now so that they would have something to repeat. And also it helped me try to distill what I knew down into something that I could repeat for myself.
Yeah. Well, I want to go through a few of them because, like I said, it would be ridiculous for us to try to do this. It can go through all of them in our conversation, but I wanted to go through the ones that caught my attention the most. One of the very first ones was, if you can avoid seeking approval of others, your power is limitless, which...
Yeah.
You know, that one I think struck me because I grew up in the Indian culture, which is basically, you know, the ultimate validation seeking society, right? Yeah. What do we do? I mean, hell, look who's running, you know, 50 of the countries in the world now.
Right.
You know, and part of me wonders how much of that is, you know, motivated by the need for parental validation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we also live in this, you know, constant comparison world. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's kind of ironic, but what do? We seek approval all day long,
right?
Whether
right.
it's consciously or unconsciously.
Right, right.
How do you get to that point where you know, does it just aging?
No, I think I think I kind of realized that pretty early on. I have other versions of the same kind of insight, which is, I'm trying to remember exactly how I said it, but don't measure your inside with someone else's outside, right? Because everybody is kind of projecting to a certain extent, and you don't know what they're actually like. And they're often not as accomplished inside as they make themselves appear. But I think rather than trying to seek the kind of accomplishment, I have a kind of a contrary idea, which I did realize pretty early on, which is that... if at all possible, you kind of want to work on things that nobody have words for right now, right? Where there's no names for what it is that you do. Like, for instance, what you're doing right now, we don't even know what to call that. Nobody, you have to spend some time kind of explaining what it is. You can't just say, well, I'm an accountant. I'm a basketball player, or, you know, I'm a math professor. To explain what you're working, it takes some time. And that's a really important sign that you are, marching to your own drum, that you're on your own way, that you're fighting. This is breakthrough territory. This is where you want to be, because it's much more going to be reflective of your own talents and your own skills. And so, trying to head to do things that they don't have a name for it because you're much more likely there to do things that only you can do. And that's another piece of advice that's my favorite.
I remember
favorite,
that one.
Which is
don't, that was probably the one, yeah, that stood out to me the most.
Right. Don't aim to be the best, aim to be the only. Mm-hmm. You can be the only when you're, that means that you're going to be doing things that people don't have a name.
Well, I wrote a book with a subtitle, Only Is Better Than Best. So
okay.
That's literally the entire ethos of everything that I do. So speaking of that, there are two things that you say. One is that getting a job is not ideal for the long term because then you only get paid when you're working.
Yeah.
And to pair that with the other one, which you just talked about, and you said that if nobody else does what you do, you'll never need a resume. Yeah. So, you know, I wanted to talk about those two things because I know that the question of 1,000 true fans and the, you know, viability of it in such a noisy world came up. And I remember I wrote a counter argument to that, even though I, you know, had, you know, I believed strongly in the principles of 1,000 true fans. I remember I thought, you know, let me start with this idea and see if it resonates. Uh-huh. And it was 100 true fanatics, instead of 1,000 true fans. But talking about that, I mean, in a noisy world, you know, is this still a viable way of thinking about, doing your own thing and, you know,
right.
being the person who doesn't need a resume?
Right. Yeah. So the premise of the 1,000 true fans in brief was that, if you have direct engagement with your fans, customers, audience, and you don't have the intermediary with a publisher or a studio or a label, if you have direct engagement with your fans, you don't need as many of them as you think. You could theoretically, make a living with just 1,000 true fans. True fans meaning that they're going to buy whatever you produce, no matter what it is. They're your true fans. And, that was a theory. That was a hypothesis when I first suggested it, I don't know, more than 15 years ago. And, it's now viable because of the platforms like Kickstarter, Patreon, YouTube monetization, all these other social media stuff, and other tools have now enabled people to do that. So there are many, many people in the world, and I know that because they've told me, who have are supported by their fans directly. And they aren't millions of fans. Again, there's thousands of them rather than millions. And that's a huge difference. That's a much more feasible thing to aim for than to become a mega star and have to have millions of fans. Mm-hmm. There's huge disadvantages to millions of fans. So anyway, that's become much more feasible. There are a lot of people doing it. There are a lot of more tools to make it do it. And you can have hybrid versions. You can, you know, still do some things with your fans directly and others with a New York publisher, as I do. I've done several very successful Kickstarter campaigns, but I also work with New York publishers like this book, Excellent Advice, is being published in New York. And it just depends on kind of what I'm trying to do. But I at least have that option. And it's really a great option to have for people who are starting out. It's still viable. It's still really good. It's still extremely powerful way to do it. But the caveat is it's at least a full-time job, maybe a half-time job, dealing with your fans. Yeah. And not everybody is suited for it. Not everybody wants to do it. Some people just want to write. They don't want to have to deal with fans every day. Some people are incapable of it. They're just not. Personality is not suited to try and make that engagement with fans and being on social media and being there. So there is a cost to it that you have to be willing to pay. And also as you scale up, or if you're a duet or a duo or a team, you have to multiply the numbers by the number of people there. And that also gets bigger in terms of the number that you need. But I think in general, this is still a really viable option for people. And it's often a great place to start, even if you don't kind of end up there. It's a great, easy way to start. And the thing about it is this niche world is that even if what you're interested in appeals to only 1 in a million people, it's really obscure. It's really odd. It's really weird. But because there's billions of people in the world, that means that there could be at least another 1,000 people like you with the same 1 in a million taste. And that's good news. You can have a business around that. You could be a creator in that way, appealing to the one in a million, but there's a thousand of you in the world. And so the test is the technology that we're trying to develop is how to match up, how to connect, how have those people find you and you find them. And that's still something that we need better tools for.
I mean, based on that article and my own experiences, had sort of made the observation that as the media landscape, became more and more fragmented, loyalty would become far more important than reach.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's true.
So one other thing that you say in this book that caught my attention was this: following your bliss is a recipe for paralysis if you don't know what you're passionate about. A better path for most people is to master something.
Yeah.
Mastery of one thing, you'll command a viewpoint to steadily find where your bliss is. And it kind of echoes some of Kel Newport's point of, so good they can't ignore you. Which, I think that this sort of passion narrative is catchy. It sounds good. It makes for nice commencement speeches, but it doesn't, map to reality for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I found that with our own kids with the same was that we were always encouraging them to follow your bliss, follow your passions. But when they got to school, it's like, I don't know what I'm interested in. I don't have the passion. What do I do? And the realization was, well, master something. Just put in the thousands of hours and master something. It almost doesn't matter because you're not going to stay there. Once you've mastered it, you can use that mastery to help you keep moving into other things, but you have to master something. And, so that's what I've seen work best with the kids of the friends that I have is those that kind of early on get the idea that they're going to master something is they're not going to stay there. They're very unlikely with this kind of fast moving world to continue. Though some might. My wife is one of those kind of people who decided what she wanted to be in high school and she became that. But most of us don't have that kind of a path. We move around, but if we move from mastering something to mastering another thing, that's really the path to do it. So even if you don't know what it is, choose something at random and just decide you're going to become world-class about it, and that'll set you off.
Yeah. Well, I want to finish with two final things. One was another quote from the book where you said, the stronger your beliefs, the stronger your reasons to question them. Regularly, don't simply believe everything you think you believe. You're the co-founder of a media outlet, and we're in a media landscape that is notorious for the spread of misinformation. I think in a lot of ways, one of the things that I found to be really dangerous, but also fascinating about the internet is that it's become this breeding ground for confirmation bias.
That's true.
So how do you get people who are so, stubborn about their own beliefs to develop this habit? And why is that so important?
Well, I think this issue of how do we trust things? I mean, part of the thing about ChatGPT is that it will make up stuff. It's creative. It's imaginative. How do we learn what to believe, what it says or does, and how much truthfulness is it? And that kind of bleeds over to just generally, how do we believe anything that we read? I think this is the big frontier that we're going to address. And I think it's, technological. I think it's, I think we need new tools that we don't have. I think we need some very deep infrastructural, things to work. In my own experience, I wrote an article in 1984, a cover story for Whole Earth, where I was publisher and editor, that was called The End of Evidence, the End of Photography as the Evidence of Anything. This was before Photoshop. But I found about a machine that was basically photoshopping before Photoshop. And so it was like, oh my gosh, we're never going to be able to believe photographs anymore. And that was in 84. So what can we believe? Well, it turns out that the only way you can tell from a photograph whether to believe it or not, or a piece of text or some sound, is not by looking at the text or the photograph or the sound. It's by looking at the source. So we are going to come to something where we have to embed in a kind of maybe cryptological way the source of the provenance of things, because that's really the only way that we can rapidly tell whether to trust something or not is where did it come from? Who made it? Are they trustworthy? And then we have to have ways to kind of assign trust to those kinds of institutions or sources. So what I'm suggesting is, yes, there's a lot of kind of techno literacy needed, a lot of kind of, you know, good internet etiquette or critical thinking skills for individuals, but that's not enough. I think we're also going to need infrastructural development and new tools to help us get to the point where we can know what to trust in this age of disinformation.
Well, I want to finish with my final question. I know you got to get going here.
Yeah,
I
have to do.
What is it that you think makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Which is really important, because I think what you want to do in life is aim towards being a kind of person that's very hard for AI to predict. Right? I mean, that's, we don't want to be predictable, because it's autocomplete. These things are just autocomplete. And if you can be completed, if you can be auto-completed by a bot, then you're not distinctive enough to be the only. So, what can you do? I think one of the things I would say is your views on one, this is a piece of advice from the book. Your views on one, issue should not be predicted from your other views. If your views on one thing can be predicted from your views on others, that means that you're basically, you're in the grip of an ideology of some sort or other. So, I would say, try to have, your own personal earned views on things, which means it's a lot more work. But constantly question what you believe, because here's the other thing. It's another piece of advice. It's a certainty that many of the things that I believe today will be cringeworthy and embarrassing in the future. And my goal is to find out where am I wrong. So it's like, what do I believe that is wrong? And I spend a lot of time on that. And that would be a way to do it, is to assume you're wrong in at least 25% of your beliefs and spend some time trying to figure out what they might be.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story and your wisdom and insights with our listeners. Where can people find out more about you and the new book and everything else that you're up to?
Yeah, I have a very easy website with my initials, kk.org. And there'll be links there. If you search for Amazon for excellent advice for living, it's all now in pre-order. And it's a little tiny pocketable book that's ideally made to give to others. As a reminder for some of these bits of advice, much of which is ancient, but I put it into my own words. So, Srivath, thank you for hosting me, inviting me to chat with you. I really appreciate the opportunity and appreciate the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.